Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the February 1st meeting of the IDEA, Inclusive Diversity, Equity, and Access Committee. Winter, roll call, please.
Chair Perkins? Vice Chair McMichael?
Here.
Regent Arascata?
There.
Regent Cruz Crawford?
Here.
Regent Goodman?
Here.
Regent Tarkanian?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And Regent Carvalho will start us or lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United
States of America. To the flag of the United States of America. To the republic for which it stands, one nation. Under God, indivisible, with liberty.
And with that, before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washo, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voices and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. And with that, we'll move to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is no public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none. And is there any electronic comments? There are none. So thank you. Now moving right along, the minutes. I would entertain a motion that to accept those minutes.
Motion for approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Regent Arascata was the motioner and vice chair is the second. And with all that in favor, please say aye.
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 And I vote aye as well. And any opposed or any abstentions? Seeing none, that motion carries. Number three, the chair's report. I'm only going to take about a half an hour or so to explain. No, I'm teasing. Don't. But I do. Let's see. I write things in the middle of the night when I'm waking up. Oh my gosh. Well, first let me say that thank you all for, you know, spending your Wednesday morning with me, and I really appreciate the support that I feel right now. Okay. It seems apropos to start Black History Month with this agenda designed to examine through an equity lens practices that may further marginalize already marginalized groups and individuals. This historic civil rights movement in the U.S. was built upon African American and Black people who had been denied the very rights that the Constitution had provisioned. The ripples of that movement have been felt when other marginalized communities have used the same logic and responses of that movement to gain rights and privileges that are previously only given to a specific sector. With the help, advice, and consult of many subject matter experts who are in this room and who have helped us put this agenda together, these documents have been drafted and are being brought forth to the IDEA Committee with the expectation of being presented to the full board with this committee's recommendations. And that is it for my chair's report. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Williams for item number four.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tillery Williams, Director of Community Engagement, Equity and Inclusion. So what you have before you for discussion and possible approval is a resolution encouraging the Nevada legislature to adopt Juneteenth as a paid state holiday. In June of 2021, President Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act into law, making Juneteenth or June 19th a federal holiday, proclaiming it as a day for all Americans to commemorate the end of slavery. This date coincides with General Order No. 3, an American legal decree issued in 1865, enforcing the Emancipation Proclamation to the residents of the state of Texas, which freed all remaining slaves in the state. In many places, Juneteenth has become a multicultural holiday where local celebrations take place across the country. Traditions include public readings of the Emancipation Proclamation, singing traditional songs such as Lift Every Voice and Sing, which also is referred to as the Black National Anthem by the NAACP, and lectures and exhibitions on African-American culture. In June 22, a year after President Biden made Juneteenth a federal holiday, only 24 states in the District of Columbia had passed legislation or issued executive orders that would provide funding to let state employees observe the day as a paid holiday, according to the Pew Research Center, which is a nonpartisan fact tank that informs the public about the issues, attitudes, and trends shaping the world. As part of its yearly priorities in 2022, the Idea Council identified creating a resolution to bring to this committee to ask for the board's support and encouraging the Nevada legislature to adopt Juneteenth as a paid state holiday here in the battle-borne state. For those board members who are new to the committee and the board in general, the Idea Council is composed of the campus diversity officers who provide statewide leadership and best practices and propose policies and practices for the improvement of equity, diversity, and inclusion issues. In addition, the council provides input to the board's Cultural Diversity Committee, now known as IDEA, for all matters related to diversity policy. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to introduce you to the IDEA Council Chair, Dana Trimble, to provide an overview of the process the council engaged in to get to this stage of presenting this resolution to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. For the record, Dana Trimble, DRI Diversity Officer and IDEA Council Chair. First, on behalf of the IDEA Council, I would like to welcome the new members of the IDEA Committee and thank you for holding this special meeting. I'm excited to see this on the agenda. As a continued reminder, as Mr. Williams said, each of our institutions is expected to have an IDEA representative on the IDEA Council to represent our students, faculty, and staff. We are on the front lines of a very diverse system, and we appreciate your willingness to serve on the IDEA Committee. We look forward to working with all of you to find better ways to support our NSHE community. I would like to provide background on the Juneteenth resolution. The Juneteenth National Independence Day Act was signed into law, creating a federal holiday on June 19, 2021, as Mr. Williams said. In Nevada, this must be approved through the legislature to take effect. Initial discussions of preparing a draft resolution showing NSHE's support of making Juneteenth a legal state paid holiday began in the IDEA Council in January 2022, a year ago. The draft was requested by the IDEA Committee with the understanding it would go to the board for a vote prior to the 2023 legislative session, which, as you know, begins on Monday. However, this was then delayed due to an urgent shift in priorities to create the anti-discrimination resolution approved by the board in September 2022. While working on this, the IDEA Council continued discussions of drafting the Juneteenth resolution, knowing this was a time-sensitive item. System office personnel planned to draft the resolution for the IDEA Council's review, but significant personnel changes in the system office again delayed creation of a draft. The IDEA Council went ahead and moved forward and created and submitted a draft to the IDEA Committee Chair at the beginning of November with the hope of getting it on the IDEA Committee's meeting agenda before the full board meeting. While this deadline was missed, we are hopeful that the IDEA Committee can review and take action on this draft resolution today to move it forward to the full board as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything you want to add, Mr. Williams?
No.
Okay. Well, with that, any questions, comments, concerns about the draft?
Regent McMichael.
Go ahead, Vice Chair.
I move motion to approve.
Thank you. We have a motion by Vice Chair McMichaels. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Was that Regent Arizcarra?
Yes, it was, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have a first and a second. All those in favor signify by saying.
Excuse me. Call for discussion before you vote.
Oh, yes, I did.
After your second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Thank you. Any further discussion or comments or questions? Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered if you have heard if there is any interest from legislators to go forward with this at this point, or is there any direction to the board with how we can advocate for this?
That is a great question, Regent, Acting Chair, Acting Chancellor. Good gosh, Urquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dale Urquiaga, for the record, there is a bill. And so as we go to session, it takes a while for bills to move. So our processes being what they are, when the board will approve this resolution, we will have plenty of time to support the legislation with board direction.
Did that answer?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Even though I'm not on this committee, I fully support this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is there a comment about how that the board can support the action, Chancellor? As individuals, I guess.
Sure. So for the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. So individual regents can always advocate. You cannot represent that you speak for the board. You'll see that policy on Friday. But the board as a whole can, by the adoption of this resolution, direct the chancellor, that would be me, to take a position on the bill. So you can always speak as individuals, and as the resolution continues towards passage, I can speak for the system.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. So that's all the discussion.
Madam Chair.
Regent Whalen.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm not on this committee either, and I appreciate your time. And this is for Chancellor Urquiaga. You just said something that we'll see the policy of why individual regents cannot represent the board on Friday. Could you enlighten us about that? It's, I don't understand that. Where does that come from? Thank you.
For the record, Associate General Counsel Linda King, the matter's not agendized for this committee to discuss today. So I would ask you, Regent Boylan, to reserve those questions for the meeting on Friday, where that matter is agendized and can be properly discussed and deliberated upon.
Interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. Any other questions? And with seeing no more, I will call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries. I'm going to presuppose unanimously. Moving on to the Inchi Equity Statement. This has been a long time coming, so I'm really excited about having this being brought forward. And Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Tillery Williams, Director of Community Engagement, Equity, and Inclusion. What you have before you for discussion and possible approval is a draft Inchi Equity Statement that reflects Inchi's values and commitment to inclusion, diversity, equity, and access. If adopted, this equity statement would inform those who access Inchi's website, whether it be students and their families or potential employees, of Inchi's commitment to elevating inclusion, diversity, equity, and access of all persons. Last year, the IDEA Council identified creating a system-wide equity statement as a priority to bring to this committee and to the board for approval. Again, Madam Chair, if I may, I would like to turn it over to Chair Trimble to share a few remarks.
Looking forward to it. Ms. Trimble?
Thank you. For the record, Dana Trimble, DRI Diversity Officer and IDEA Council Chair. And I am also very excited to see this. This has been a long time coming. So, Inchi currently has no published public-facing equity statement. These are common among higher education institutions and demonstrate a commitment to providing equitable opportunities for all students, faculty, and staff. Discussion of creating the equity statement began 2 years ago at the IDEA Council retreat in February 2021. At that time, the IDEA Committee approved, keep in mind, the IDEA Committee approved directing staff to develop an equity statement to be included in the handbook. Various stakeholders, including our institution's faculty senates, were included in this process. In August 2021, an initial draft was presented to the IDEA Committee with input from the IDEA Council. The next planned step was to create an informal working group to edit and revise the draft, but this was never completed. And again, personnel changes in the system office delayed progress. The IDEA Council has continued to bring this forward despite the 2-year lag. Our council worked with Mr. Williams to make the draft equity statement more concise and include direct links to the handbook rather than duplicating language. We thank him for that work. We submitted this revision to the IDEA committee chair and at the beginning of November 2022 and ask that you please review and consider taking action on this item today. As a majority-minority system, it's critical that we demonstrate our commitment to equity, understanding that we must follow our words now with actions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comment? Okay. I'm going to take it that everybody's had the opportunity to read over and consider. Are there any questions or concerns about the equity statement? If not, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
The motion was by Vice Chair McMichaels and seconded by Regent Tarkanian. Any questions, comments, concerns? Regent Carvalho.
Chair Perkins.
And then Regent Arriscada.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious how this will... I don't see that this motion states that it will be part of our handbook. Is there any interest by this committee to forward that to the board as an addition to our handbook, or how, other than being on our website? I think that this is a very important statement that that is suitable to be included in our handbook, and I'm just asking for clarification on where it will be and if there is an intention for it to be in the handbook.
Mr. Williams.
At this point, it would only be on the NC website, but if it is the will of this board, the staff could take that direction to do so. I would like to defer to Chancellor Arriscada to get his input on this matter.
For the record, Dale Arriscada. So I know there was conversation with legal counsel about this equity statement, making sure that it aligns with and does not contradict board policy. And I think that language was ultimately worked out. So the board certainly could add language like this to its handbook. I'm trying to think of a similar statement in the handbook. I suppose the mission statement section would be where it might live. It is a statement about how we operate. It is not a policy. And so the difficulty of putting it in Title II, that's a code, and so it, but if it lived in Title IV, which may be where the mission statement is, I apologize, I don't remember, it could certainly live in that part of a handbook. You're not making policy there's no accountability structure around the statement, we can certainly, if it is the will of the committee, we could look for a place to include this kind of language.
Thank you. I guess that sounds like a new business item. Regent Arriscada.
Regent Carvalho, spot on with the question. That's exactly what I was going to ask, is where is it going to be placed? How is it going to be placed in a policy? Where is it going to be located on the website and or disseminated through all the campuses and throughout the system of higher ed? So thank you, Chair Regent Carvalho.
Regent Goodman.
I think that this statement is wonderful. If we're putting this in our handbook and it's, just moving forward and considering that, who knows what the atmosphere is in 10 years, shouldn't we say persons who identify as men as well? I feel like that's really the only thing that's left out of here. And if it's going to be a true equity statement, I think it should be truly equitable.
So something about identity?
No, it says here, persons who identify as women. So I'm just saying, and then we're saying persons of marginalized sexual orientations, I mean, this is a wonderful statement, and I feel like we've captured everybody. But we don't know what the environment is going to be in 10 years and if this is going to be a part of who we are. I do think that we should say persons who identify as men.
Good point.
Madam Chair?
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, I support what Regent Goodman just said. I think that's terrific. You've got to, we've got to stop marginalizing men. I still, you know, refer to myself as a man. So I don't want to be left out. If everybody else is in there, I'm a he. I'm in there. Thank you, Regent Goodman. That was a great catch. I'm surprised I didn't catch it. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Regent Boylan.
If it is the will of this board, staff can make that change, and of this committee, we can staff can make that change and have it available for the full board vote whenever there may be. One thing I would like to put before you is that with this equity statement, if you look at the paragraph that leads into the bullet points, it says that NSHE actively encourages application for both student admission and system workplace opportunities from members of groups with historical and our current barriers to inclusion, diversity, equity, and access, including but not limited to. So that this statement was targeted towards those groups who have historically been marginalized. If the board feels that men should be included, staff can definitely make that change.
Thank you for that input. I think I'm going to have to agree that great suggestion, very good thinking outside the box, but typically men aren't marginalized. And that's, does that make, go ahead.
I don't know. You know, I just think if we're going to put something in our handbook, we should make sure that that's included. And I've seen situations where sometimes men are, and I just think that in the spirit of this board, I just think that you know, if we're gonna create a statement like that, I, you know, and maybe this isn't the right place if we're talking about historical, because it's definitely not historical. But I would say that there are more instances now in recent history, you know, in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years. So I just want it to be fully equitable. It's really my only goal here. So,
is that a motion?
No, that was not a motion.
I'm going to sit on the side of the motions.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the discussion. I appreciate the ideas. With that, if there's no more questions, I'd like to entertain a motion. Do I?
Oh, Associate right. General Counsel Linda King, for the record, Regent Goodman has indicated that she is not she has not put forth a motion to amend. You do have a motion on the table that is to approve the statement as drafted.
Thank you. That's right.
I'd like to make a motion for. Whoop.
Go ahead, Regent Arscana.
I was going to make a motion to approve the statement as presented today with the amendment on bullet point 4 for persons who identify as women and men.
Linda King, Associate General Counsel, for the record, that would be you're seeking an amendment to the original motion. So we go back to the motion maker. I believe it was Vice Chair McMichael.
Oh, okay. That's right. Vice Chair McMichael. You would have to...
Yes.
Accept the motion. Accept
the motion. I'll accept that. I'll accept that.
Okay. Okay, so now we have an amended motion on the floor by the motion maker and the seconder, and I can now call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you so much. And item number six, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tillery Williams, Director of Community Engagement, Equity, and Inclusion. At the November 18, 2022 meeting of this committee, Amber Clayton, Senior Director, Knowledge Center Operations for the Society for Human Resource Management, presented background information and related research on the blind hiring process, which is a recruitment strategy that promotes diverse hiring by blocking out a job candidate's personal information, both on job applications and supportive materials such as resumes, that could influence or bias a hiring decision. Today, we are requesting that this committee continue the conversation and consider allowing Acting Chancellor Urquiaga to move forward with implementing a blind hiring pilot within the INSHE. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Any questions? Has everybody had an opportunity to? I think I see Regent Boylan. Go ahead, sir. You're on mute.
Sorry. Thank you. I was at that meeting too, but I'm still kind of confused. This blind hiring, and if you take away people's information, what exactly gives away a person's, whatever we are trying to hide and equalize everything? I mean, we have to have a name there, right? And even now, I don't see in hiring processes that there's anything else that gives away a person's anything. Help me out, someone. Mr. Tillerman?
I think I can field that one first and then I'll toss it on over.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
So many times, it's our implicit bias. It's the things that we unconsciously think. Like, for instance, you're going to, if you look at a resume, 9 times out of 10, if you see somebody named Thomas, they're going to be more likely to be interviewed or go to the second step if your name was Butch. You know, it's just because of our implicit bias, because of the biases we have that we're not even conscious of. We look at female names different than male names. It's just so in order to eliminate that, we would eliminate the names. You can even tell things about people from which high school they graduated from. So like if you graduated from, you know, an elite high school, then that actually biases because, you know, you went to this prestigious high school rather than a publicly funded one. So all those things are in our implicit bias. They're something that we're not even conscious that we're doing. And so when you eliminate the person's name or some biographical, like where if they were born, for instance, if you eliminate that, you have a better chance of getting a wider variety and a deeper pool of people that would otherwise be disqualified just based on things that have nothing to do with getting the job done. Mr. Williams?
Sorry, go ahead.
Tillery Williams, for the record, Chair Perkins, I concur. I mean, you know, especially in this state, you may have a candidate that has on their resume UNLV or UNR. And for some people, they may not understand or they may not think that they're doing it, but that could potentially give someone a leg up. Whereas with the blind hiring, you're more focused on the merit of what the individual has accomplished as listed in their resume and in their cover letter, and less concerned about where they may hail from or what school they may have attended. So I concur with your assessment.
That answer your question, Regent?
No, ma'am. It's just a wee bit helpful, but wow. So we don't. Are we saying that NSHE would stop even putting names of people in there? Because we've been screwing up hiring lately by NSHE and by the board. So are we suggesting that there is no names, no nothing, no school? We don't get any information about this person and we're supposed to decide that we'll select them? Is that what it means? Help me with that.
Well, the last hiring event that I was involved in, We had a list of a list of applications came in. The first round, they were eliminated. Then they went to the second round, which came to the selection committee. And then from that selection committee, they were then forwarded to the full board. So that process would still happen. It's just that at the beginning, when you're looking at the resumes, you would basically eliminate, their names, so that they would have a chance at even based on their merit, on the things that they have done, rather than being eliminated just because their name doesn't happen to fit within a certain boundary. I see Regent Goodman.
Thank you, ma'am.
Regent Cruz Crawford.
I just wanted to hopefully provide some insight on this. So we've used blind hiring practices in the military. I know if you have ever spent time in the military, some of you know that boards have blind hiring practices. And basically the name and gender are the two items that are eliminated. And I'll give you an example. So I am a Cruz Crawford, and I was told by some people when I was running for office that I would have a better chance by removing Cruz. There's also blind hiring practices. Think about the last name Muhammad. I have seen that have had, opinions one way or the other. Names do have a lot of implicit bias, meaning that it's normal that you've said that, Boylan, because our implicit bias are biases that we're not aware of. So just by removing that name, it doesn't remove any credentials, but it really helps us look at what that person achieves outside of basically what we do here as a board, right? We have our statements regardless of race and gender and so on and so forth. It's really it is a helpful practice to achieve what we are set forth to achieve here with this IDEA committee. And I've seen it be very, very successful with that, so that we can really look at the meat of the work that person does rather than what they were born with.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you, ma'am.
Did that answer, Regent Boylan? Did I help?
All of this helps just a wee bit at a time. It's like drops making up something big for me, because I just don't want to see the pendulum swing too far the other way and we just get a blank sheet of paper and say this is person one or this is person two. Let's see if they should be hired. That's all I'm trying to figure out. But everything helps. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. Regent Goodman?
Madam Chair?
Regent, do you mind? Regent Tarkanian, go ahead.
Yes, how far do you go with this blind choice? For example, is it just the place they graduated? Is it the name? Or will this give entities permission to move into other things? If you're saying you're blind, are you specifically saying on name and graduate? I know when I look at, I have to tell you the truth, when I look at someone who wants to be hired, I know that which institutions are more rigorous than others, and that does affect how I think. But that doesn't mean that that's an affection against a particular person.
This is true.
If you go to Stanford or you go to someplace else, for example, there might be a difference in how strict your training has been.
That's one of the things that we were just trying to get down to, the merit of the person, the things that they have accomplished. So we'd still get that they have a master's degree. But it kind of would eliminate the things that would distinguish, that would make it, that would affect our implicit bias. So name and gender is one of the things that we can eliminate, but it won't be a blank sheet of paper, that's for sure. So they still have to go through the same qualifications in HR, but then when they come to us, they would the names or certain items would be redacted.
Madam Chair. I could see where you might keep the name blind But there are other things that you might want to move to make blind that might be important as far as selecting a person.
Well, we would work with HR and also I think the SHRM, the hiring, a body that would that has done this before, and we would take their advice and their input to make sure that what we're trying to accomplish is accomplished without compromising the quality of the candidates. Did that answer you?
Madam Chair?
That's going to be a toughie if you're going to say a person's feelings.
Feelings.
I agree with Ms. Regent Boylan. That's all.
Thank you, ma'am.
Madam Chair?
Hold on, Regent Boylan. I was going to check and see if there's anybody
yes, ma'am.
Before we go back. There was. Regent Goodman.
So it sounds like the parameters of what will be blind on that initial screening process has not been determined yet. Is that the case? So, and second question, if I may, is this just the initial screening process? So is this, okay, I get this resume, this is the first screen, but as we do that second interview and then, you know, moving forward, are we given the information, you know, moving forward? This is just to make sure there isn't any bias in that first round of choosing resumes. Is that correct?
Tillery Williams, for the record. Yes, that is correct. As someone who's gone through it, once you get to your interview, they have your resume unredacted. They see you. They know who you are. And you go through the screening process as if you would any regular screening process.
Thank you.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. I was going to say the same thing Regent Tarkanian said, but she said it better than me. You know, if you're from a certain university or certain place or certain... I know how rigorous we are at different universities and colleges that I've been to. So it would be really something that if we just think one college or one institution does not produce better people than, well, as people, excuse me, as people, I mean, doesn't produce more well-trained people. I'd rather have a more well-trained person than an ill-trained person. So that's something that I would be really concerned about. And I agree with Regent Tarkanian wholeheartedly. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. To your point, Regent Boylan, I think we all want the best candidate. And that's actually, I think, where the root of this is coming from, is you are getting rid of those implicit biases that you have just growing up in America forever, how long? And by looking at just the core of someone's resume, their work experience, where, you know, they went to school, whether that's decided to be redacted or not in the initial, but you're looking at who they are on paper and their experience, and then you make that decision to bring them in for the in-person interview, which Mr. Tillery said, that's when you get the unredacted and you can learn more about them. And, you know, this also forces HR managers, I think, to ask important questions for the job and not important questions about the individual, because we want to make sure that our job descriptions are also clear. And so I understand the points that are being made, but I think you are actually right that we do want the best people. And this is just one approach and a thought to getting those people the best. So that's what I would say.
Thank you for that. Regent Carvalho. And then, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to echo the sentiment that Regent Brown just gave. I appreciate that. But I wanted to also ask something a little bit more technical in terms of what this pilot looks like. Are there specific roles that will be included or excluded?
What's the timing on this pilot? Will there be a report back to this committee on the results of that? I'm just curious, what is, in terms of this pilot, how is that defined? Thank you.
I keep wanting to make you a regent. Acting Chancellor Urquiaga.
Don't do that. For the record, Dale Urquiaga. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Regent Guest. So, couple things. First, I'll say up front, I've used blind hiring at a national organization before. So this is not new. And as we heard from the human resources representative, there are standards for how it is done and at what part in the process it is done. I will, by way of addressing the college or university requirement, one reason, and I'm not saying our pilot will necessarily redact that information, but one reason that it is often included is, for example, an historically Black college or university signals that the individual is in fact an African American and thereby brings along implicit bias. So we're not talking about the difference between UNLV and Stanford. We're talking about Howard. So that's why it's often included, is to remove racial bias in the hiring, the screening process. So all of that said, and with the disclosure that I support this, the reason that the committee chair and I have discussed this as a pilot is to deal with exactly the questions that you all have. We have some interest expressed from at least one department at an institution. I had originally thought INSHE would have, the system office would have the capacity. We don't have enough staff to do this, but we will. My intention would be if the committee and then the board move forward with authorizing a pilot like this, we would find folks, and I think they're at UNLV, who I think is represented here. I don't mean to call you out, but there may be another department so that we can build for you a pilot that shows, well, when we redact this kind of information, we get this outcome. If we do the redaction differently, we get this kind of an outcome. And then we could report back to see if this warranted further board policy that all hiring would move in this way. It's a complicated change for us because our system is automated and this is often a paper intensive process. So we have to work through some mechanics, but that is the reason that I requested that you authorize a pilot, is so that we could build you an evaluative study of how this might be implemented efficiently and what results we got that might differ. So that's my commitment to the committee. If you forward this to the board and the board authorizes this, we would develop that pilot, be transparent about what was included in the pilot, and report back to the board.
Thank you. Did that answer your... Thank you. Thank you, Regent. Thank you, Regent and Acting Chancellor. Regent Goodman.
Thank you, Chair. What I would add to this is, you know, I am a business owner, and I feel like, especially since obviously this is a system of higher education, first of all, I want to say that it is incredibly disappointing that in this day and age that someone would look at Howard University and have bias. So I just want to get that out there. I know it's a fact, but I just want to say I'm sorry that that exists. But I do feel, because we are a system of higher education, I just want to make a point as you move forward and develop the pilot that, you know, clearly education does matter. And as a person who hires people, it's, you know, the school's great, but I want to see what they've done with that education. So it's all a piece of the pie. So I just think that is an integral piece simply because this is academia. So I just wanted to make that point as you're moving forward developing the pilot.
Thank you for that input. I want to add that in job descriptions and job hiring, that sometimes can be a recruitment tool if you list blind hiring on there, because a lot of jobs, as you know, you look at the description and you're like, they've already got somebody. You know, they know who they're going to hire already, so why should I even bother to put my application in? But when you use blind hiring and you state that in the description, a lot of people will apply because they're like, oh, you know, they actually are looking for somebody that's qualified. They actually are looking for an individual, but they're actually looking for the person that's right for the job rather than creating the job, rather than vice versa. Does that make... Thank you. And any further comments from Regent Arascata.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Only question is there a time frame to initiate this pilot process, this pilot program?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, to the Vice Chair of the Board. So that will depend on the coalition of the willing who comes forward. And so all you would be doing is authorizing me to find a department or departments or offices who would participate in this, and then we could report back on whether it would occur over some months or an academic year. Or I reserve the right to work that out depending on who is able to handle this and how long they think it will take them.
Thank you.
It's an ambiguous answer, but I'll take it.
Thank you for all the input. Do I have a motion to do I have a motion for the blind hiring pilot?
Regent McMichael, motion to approve.
Thank you, Vice Chair McMichael.
Regent Goodman, second.
Thank you, Regent Goodman. So we have a first and a second. Is there any further discussion? And with that, I'd like to call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It looks like that motion carries. Thank you all. Item number seven, the IDEA committee meeting schedule. I guess I'll go first. It seems like if we as a committee only meet twice a year, then it doesn't seem like we're really, really committed to IDEA. If we can't handle, things come up so fast and this landscape changes, and it's like shifting sands. So if we only meet twice a year, it doesn't really do us justice, and it won't accomplish the goals that we just approved earlier in this meeting. And with that, I will turn it over to Acting Chancellor Urquiaga.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for recognizing me. For the record, Dale Urquiaga. So for the newer regents, when will you not be new anymore, I wonder? For the newer regents, by board directive some time ago, the board has allocated over the year its committees to have meetings every quarter or on what we call at the staff level sort of off-cycle. So this was a committee that was off-cycle. I will get these wrong. The board's interim chief of staff can correct me. But those committees that meet every quarter are the Business, Finance, and Facilities Committee, the ARSA Committee, the Academic Research Student Affairs Committee, and Internal Audit. And then IDEA, Health Sciences, Workforce, Security meet on this twice per year. And so the request has come from the chair and from the council, a separate entity that reports to the chancellor, that this committee meet more frequently. And so I support this. My request is it's better for staff if we know when y'all are going to meet, because it allows both my staff to prepare, but we also need consider the need, the capacity of the board office as to when all those meetings occur, because they all stack up on each other. And so I am agnostic about whether this committee meets at the time of the quarterly regent meetings or at some other time in the year. I do think that it should meet four times per year, but it's really up to you whether you wish to meet at the time of the quarterly. I would ask you to ask your chief of staff if that's possible, just from a management standpoint, as we stack up those meetings on your board staff. That has not to do with me. I like it. Mr. Williams could plan his calendar around four regular meetings and he would know where they are. It's just hard for us, particularly because Mr. Williams has other duties as assigned, if we have lots and lots of special meetings, they test the bandwidth of the staff. So thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, anything to add?
I don't have anything except for this was also a priority coming from the IDEA Council as well. So I think that's pretty much the only thing I have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee or any member that's present today? Was that Regent?
Regent McMichael.
Vice Chair McMichael.
Yes. My question is, if we do move this to four times a year, wouldn't we have to first increase our staff size? Because I know we're understaffed now, and this would really, you know, tend to overwhelm them if each committee then says, well, I'd like my committee to meet four times a year also. So I prefer to make sure that we're not overburdening the staff and that we would at least be adequately manned for such a move. Thank you.
Great question. I will make a statement and then I'll turn it over to the chief of staff. We're having special meetings now, which actually kind of throw a monkey wrench into how things, you know, are flowing. So it seems like if we had a scheduled meeting, it would reduce that stress level as opposed to increase the stress level. Chief of Staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Carrie Nikolajewski, Interim Chief of Staff, for the record. Without speaking about stress levels, I will say that Regent McMichael does have a valid point. We do have a vacancy in our special assistant coordinator position. We right now have two staff persons that do the minutes and staff the meetings for all committees, plus the full board. Two, and we have what, eight committees, nine committees? When we add a search, like the chancellor search, it does add. It doesn't mean that that will impact what you decide as a board, but we may need to look at recruiting and filling that position.
Thank you. Any other questions? Regent Goodman?
I just think there's no purpose of having a committee unless you're actually going to meet more than twice a year. So I think four times a year should be standard, actually. And I understand Carrie's position. I'm not minimizing that. But at the same time, if we want to actually affect positive change, we should probably meet four times a year.
Thank you. And with that, any more discussion or questions? And with that, I'd like to entertain a motion.
That's motion to approve.
Thank you, Vice Chair McMichael. Do I have a second?
Second.
Regent Arascata for the second. Thank you so much. Any further discussion?
Discussion.
Yes, Regent Arascata.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm on the INSHE website right now under the related pages on committees. My only request is under those ad hoc committees and the standing committees that it lists somewhere on this website of the frequency of each of these committees, because nowhere on our website does it identify when these committees meet, all eight of them. None of them have this. And that's all.
Thank you, sir. I will include that in new business. Great idea. And with that, I'll call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you all. And moving right along, new business, if you'll move Regent Arascata's suggestion to new business, just include that. And Regent Carvalho, what was your new business? Okay. We got it. It'll come. And we'll add Regent Carvalho's earlier comment to new business. Any other new business? Regent Carvalho.
Acting Chancellor Urquiaga reminded me of what my new business was, so thank you. it was to bring the equity statement to the full board for approval in our handbook.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any other new business? And with that, we're to public comment. Any public comment in ELCO? Hearing none.
No public comment in ELCO.
Thank you. Any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno.
Any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none. Any public comment electronically? And that ends that session. So thank you all. And with that, I'll close out the meeting. We are adjourned.